double stars, some stuff we bought, listener emails, and other observations on episode 411 of the Actual Astronomy Podcast. I'm Chris, and joining me is Shane. We are amateur astronomers who love looking up the night sky, and this podcast is for everybody who likes going out under the stars. So we finally got a little bit of a warm-up, Shane, but it's only really been a week, and it was a pretty messy week between wind, melt, ice, and we even had some snow. So did you get out observing in any of this?
I did get out one night on March 10th. So actually 7 days ago from when we're recording this episode, it was a nice evening. The wind wasn't too bad. It was about +2 when I was outside. So, you know, for our local normals, that's a pretty warm day. And it was quite comfortable. Seeing wasn't wonderful. I'd maybe give it like 2 out of 5. Mm-hmm. Transparency was okay. Maybe a 3 out of 5. Certainly not the best conditions. However, you know, not being able to observe very much the last few months, I'll take anything I can get right now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was fun. I spent about an hour or two in the backyard. I took out the Borg 90FL. I'm trying to use that as much as I can just to get a feel for it, you know, what it can show and how it operates. You know, one thing about these ultralight telescopes is it does really make balance a little more challenging, especially if you're using, you know, 2-inch diagonals and 2-inch eyepieces, because they weigh a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these little Borgs just have no real weight to them, you know, which is great, but it, mm-hmm. you know, like I say, it sort of introduces a little bit of a balance issue. However, pretty easy to overcome, you know, just get a longer dovetail, and then it allows you to change that center of gravity of the telescope with the eyepieces, and away you go.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, with this abnormally warm winter, I've really taken advantage to get out a few times and start knocking off the winter double stars on the RASC double star list.
Okay.
And so I only have 2 left, and yeah, I don't know how many I knocked off last week, about 8, it looks like, maybe a few more. So maybe nice. I'll just go through that list.
Sure.
Pretty much all of these I observed with my Leica zoom at 7.9 millimeter. Uh-huh. So, you know, on a 500 millimeter focal length telescope, that gives me about 62 power. And for the most part, that was perfect. So the first pair that I looked at was SAO 130806. It's kind of an interesting pair. It was a very desolate field. Like, there wasn't much for other stars in the field. But this pair, I think it was around magnitude 4.5, 5, something like that. So it was quite bright, and it was quite obvious when you saw them there. The primary was kind of a creamy white, and the secondary looked a little bit blue. And then, you know, what I always like to do is when I see color in a star, I like to try to validate it in Sky Safari, you know, just to make sure I'm seeing what I think I'm seeing. And it's, you know, a little bit of a test of my eye, but also the optics. And Sky Safari listed the primary as topaz yellow. So I don't know, I think that sort of matches my creamy white description.
Mm-hmm.
But the secondary apparently is sea green. So sort of interesting, and I'm not sure if my, you know, blue description quite captures that. I think maybe I'm guessing sea green is possibly turquoise. I don't know.
I'm looking at just like randomly, like just Googled it, and Stargazer's Lounge, someone had an observation of it because it's 32 Eridani, I think, is the star.
Yeah. Yep.
And they said to them it was yellow and the other one was greenish blue, so that kind of lands somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. Do they mention what aperture they're using?
Oh, probably, but it was like a scrolly kind of thing.
Yeah,
so yeah, I think aperture would probably play a fairly significant role in what you can and can't see.
Yeah, and I don't know if focal length factors into that. I'll just say that for me, it seems like longer focal lengths, I'm able to see star color a little more accurately. Whether or not that's just coincidence or not, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they were fairly close, but easy to separate. No challenge with the 90 mil. Then I moved on to 131063. The primary here was quite bright, and the secondary was a little more challenging, but I think it was because I was looking for it to be closer, and the separation here is actually quite a bit. Like, I think it's 82 arc seconds. So, you know, once I took a look at that, then I located the secondary fairly quickly. But
sorry, which one was this? SAO?
131063.
Okay, this is also an Eridani, it looks like.
Yeah, I was playing around up there a little bit. And you're just looking for some observations of that?
Well, actually, I'm just looking this one up now. Oh, I see. It's right in Eridani. Holy cow, this is the middle of nowhere.
It really is. And, you know, when we recorded with Mark, I referenced using my digital setting circles. For some of these doubles, particularly because I'm in a light polluted sky, like star hopping and finding some of these would definitely be challenging without the setting circles. But the beauty of the setting circles of, you know, not just the speed of which I can locate these things, but then like it sort of takes the questioning out of the equation. Like, do I have the right star field or not? Well, with the setting circles, the answer is always yes.
Yeah.
Definitely makes it a little easier.
No, that one's fairly bright, though. You should be able to see that with your eye. I think it looks like about a third, maybe a fourth magnitude star, something like that. Not too, too faint.
Yeah, I'm just taking a quick look here. Where do I have that note?
Yeah. Not too, too far from Rigel. Looks like it's about 15 degrees south. West of Rigel there, and yeah, sort of right in the heart of Eridani. Yeah, not a bad spot.
Yeah, magnitude, I think 4.4.
Yeah.
Yeah, which my backyard, I'm probably closer to 3 for my limiting magnitude. It's a little bright, unfortunately. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Next one on the list is SAO 112528. This one here, another bright white primary. And then the secondary was pretty close, but quite a bit fainter.
Sorry, SAO 112528?
28, yeah.
Oh, and that's Rho Orionis.
Yes, yep. Yes, indeed. Have you looked at that one before?
Yeah. Yeah, that one's not too bad. Yeah, I'm just zooming in on it here now. I can't see the doubles or anything in my software. I just have like the free. Oh, no, there it is. Huh. So is one yellow and one blue on this?
So for me, let me just take a look here. So yeah, the white was primary to my eye, but Sky Safari says it's orange. And then the secondary to my eye looked blue, but Sky Safari did not note any color. So I'm not sure. What color are you seeing there?
Oh, just on this, it looks like yellowish. It's very pale yellow and then blue. And this one sits just sort of inside the shield. If you actually drew a line from Mintaka, which is the westerly star in the belt of Orion, to the star Tabit, which is the brightest star in the shield, it lies about halfway in between those. It's fairly bright, though. Like, that's not much fainter than third magnitude.
So. Orion?
Yeah.
Rho Orionis. Yeah, 4.6. It's listed here.
Oh, is it 4.6? Huh.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't find it on this. I'm just using the freeware version of Stellarium. But it's, I don't know. It's, for some reason, it's not. It's giving me like a million different things about the location, but it is not giving me the magnitudes. Usually, I use Sky Safari as well. I might just buy it for my Mac, but it's janky because it's version 6 that you got to buy, and 7's been out for like 3 years or something. Oh, anyway. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Next one was quite neat. It's just below like the nebulosity of M42, and the SAO designation is 132301. And it's quite a bright, rich star field. Lots to look at. And this one actually was kind of similar to the one we just talked about, 112528, in that the primary was quite bright and, you know, white to my eye, and a fairly close pairing. But the secondary, not nearly as bright. But what was kind of neat, like, even though they were close, the, for whatever reason, the dark lane between the two really was distinct and really jumped out. And I'm not sure if it just, you know, right part of the sky and the conditions are maybe a little bit better there, but it really jumped out to me how distinct that was.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of neat. And again, just having like M42 right there and that whole field was quite pretty. I really enjoyed the view.
So what power were you using?
About 62.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And at that, so like with the Leica zoom at that focal length, it's about an 82 degree apparent field of view as well. So it's a nice view.
Okay. So is that like standard power that you're using for these, or do you kind of try different powers using the zoom and then settle on one for the observation?
Well, because I have the setting circles, I left it basically at the most powerful setting that it had. Now, if I was star hopping, sometimes I would back it off so I have just a wider overall field, you know, to try to locate it. But for the most part, I stuck at that 8mm, well, 7.9.
Cool.
Yeah. Next one here is 133316. And this one is up in Monoceros. Beta Monoceros.
That's
actually,
Beta Monoceros. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Two real bright white stars. And they were quite close. Now, this was probably the highlight of the night for me. So the two bright primaries popped right away. However, I guess, well, just through the eyepiece, this would be the brighter star on the bottom right looked a little like oblong. Like it didn't look like it was a nice pinpoint of light, which made me wonder, is there another star there? Like, is this an actual three star system? Yeah. But I didn't have enough power with the Leica. So I grabbed my other zoom, which is the Nagler 3-6, and ran that from 6mm down to 3. And every click along the way, it exposed more and more of this third star. And I did have to go all the way to the bottom. So I had to go all the way to the 3mm setting, which, you know, is starting to run this little Borg, you know, probably not to its limit, but at 167 times, it's
getting up
probably
there.
Getting up there. Yeah.
That's probably about the limit. Yeah.
Yeah, it might be. But anyway, what was super neat about this is like resolving the entire three star system was super cool. The two stars that were really close that required, you know, the extreme power were 2.8 arc seconds apart. So pretty close. And, certainly, you know, this telescope could split something closer with the right conditions. I don't know what that would be. Maybe 1.5 to 2 arc seconds would be my guess. But anyway, I really enjoyed that. I thought that was a neat system where, you know, you did have to throw some power on it. And what I would be curious about is if I went back with a smaller aperture, like a 60 mil or a 76 mil, and see if I could resolve it, you know, with a smaller telescope. But regardless, I highly recommend that. If anybody wants a neat double to look at, SAO 133316, or probably easier to remember, just Beta Monoceros.
Yeah, that's a pretty easy one to find. But hey, you said, and sorry, like I'm like trying to look these up on the star chart and observations and that sort of thing. I was curious though, you mentioned 3mm. Like was that the Leica in a Barlow or something? Or it doesn't go down to 3mm, does it?
No, it was the Nagler zoom.
The Nagler zoom. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Sorry.
Yeah.
Carry on.
No, all good. Yeah. Next one here. Where the heck is it? This one was up in Canis Major, 173349. It's also known, actually, this is hilarious. It's known as Winter Albireo. And why that's funny is here's my notes.
I think I put it in wrong. Just a sec. I put that in as, it came up as 145 Canis Majoris. Can you just give me the SAO again?
Yeah, 173349.
Yeah. No, I keep 173349 SAO.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, it's given that to me as starring Candice Majors. Winter Albireo.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, so what why I chuckled here when I read this. So I have the RASC list in front of me, but I didn't have that while I was observing. So my notes, beautiful double, and I said Albireo clone. So the fact that it's known as Winter Albireo is I guess affirming my observation. And so my notes here, I said, I think the primary is a darker orange than Albireo. Like it just was really pronounced. And sometimes when I'm looking at Albireo, I find that the orange almost washes out a little bit and starts to, I don't know, take on more of a creamy white or more so on the white side of that spectrum. And anyway, with Winter Albireo here, the secondary is definitely a blue. It's a softer blue, but a beautiful pair. You know, the color contrast was incredible. Easy split. Highly recommend people taking a look at that one.
Yeah, that's not too, that's just north of NGC 2362, which is the T. Canis Majoris cluster. I like that one. Looks pretty good in binoculars. Can this Winter Albireo be split in binoculars, do you think?
Just taking a look here at the separation. Do I have that here? Actually, I don't think that this list has the separate or the reference I'm looking at doesn't have the separation. I'm not sure. I don't know that, like, say our 12 by 36s would do it. I'm not confident in that.
I want to try to hunt it down now because I like that region of sky. It's pretty nice, so.
Yeah, you should. Blake listed. So he, like in this list that I have from him, he lists the millimeters that are required to observe this easily, I think,
Oh,
like
okay.
for aperture. And this one he has 90 millimeters.
Oh, okay.
However, you know, like Ro Orionis that we talked about earlier, he's got that listed at 150. And
Oh.
you know, I was able to do it with 90. And a number of these, I've been able to do it with much smaller aperture than what was listed. I think the aperture that Blake lists just, you know, sort of guarantees that you'll see it. And
Yeah, well, he and I talked a fair bit about that when he was making the list, and because for me, I was sort of a good test subject on some of these, although I only looked at 10% of the stars. Is because, and you're pretty experienced looking at this, but I find like with lunar observing, if you're not experienced looking at the double stars, it's very hard to do. It actually is. It's cool, but like it took me like quite a few nights to kind of start whittling away at, below the apertures that he recommended. So I think he just sort of sided on the side of caution for some of these to make it, it's meant to be an introductory to double stars. I mean, it's cool you're doing it, but I think you observed a few double stars before you ever even started the list. So,
Yeah, for sure. For sure. The last two are in Puppis, and the first one that I'll talk about is SAO 174020. And my notes are just that these are twins. Like they look like two identical stars. They're the same magnitude, same color, which was white. And they're pretty close, but you know, still a relatively easy split. If I look at Blake's notes, he said, cool, car headlights, nearly same brightness, although he was picking up a little bit of yellow in the color of them. And that the separation was 9.6 arc seconds. So while that's close, it certainly is not super challenging given the right aperture and conditions.
Yeah, that one it's like a fifth 5.7 magnitude star just west of M93. Pretty rich area here. That would
Yeah, it
be
is.
tough. I think this would, sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but I think this would be tough if you were using charts, because this area is just riddled with stars and clusters and nebulas and all kinds of wild and wacky stuff.
Yeah, I agree. Then the last one was SAO 153363 in Puppis, and this is two Puppis or Popeye or whatever it would be. And my notes
Popeye the
here.
Sailor Man, because
Popeye the
Pappas
Sailor.
was the stern, right?
Oh,
Sorry,
yeah.
SAO, what'd you say? SAO 1.
153-363.
I'm just following along with the class. Yeah, two Pappas.
Yep. And this one here, I said primary is slightly brighter, pretty easy separation. Primary has a blue tinge, and the secondary looks like it might have an orange tinge, but I'm not sure. I'm trusting my eye as it's starting to get a little fatigued. And then if I come to Blake's notes here, he says nearly equal color, yellow and blue. So I guess maybe we are pretty close, him and I, on that. And nearly equal brightness, and it's not too far from Messier 46 as well.
Yeah. See, what I'm hoping you can do is give me a bunch of really, I like the Winter Albireo one. That sounds cool. But I'm hoping that like once you either get so far, get like you'll give me just some good ones. And I bought, I'm really getting, sorry, I don't want to sidetrack you here. Finish what you're saying.
No, that's really it, Chris. That's the last one.
Oh,
So
okay.
over to you.
Yeah. No, I was just what I did is I spent some time this winter, and I meant to mention this before. I just think it's because the double stars haven't come up, is like how to sketch them. So I was playing around one weekend on how to sketch these colorful double stars, and I was just hoping at some point you could give me like even in the summer to mess around with this. Is a handful of them that are quite colorful. You know, there'd be Albireo, and you know, there's a few others I know off by heart. But what I wanted to do is, you can go in and at the local art store here, which is Black Dog Art Supply, but they don't do much in the way of online sales, unfortunately, because they are like 25% cheaper than Amazon. Not that I do buy lots on Amazon too, like everybody else, but for my art supplies, I go to this place because it is much less expensive. It's awesome. And they have a like a whole color-coded set of these fine tip felt markers by Faber-Castell, like the whole, like more than the whole spectrum. So you could go in and you could find the one that's going to work for your color. And then Berta Beltran, she talked to me about how to do your colored stars. You put your like white down, and then you sort of put this over top. There's kind of like a way to do it. I'm still kind of futzing around with it a little bit, but part of the problem is that the ink that I got is kind of water soluble, and I think these are water based. So anyhow, I got to try to figure out maybe a different type of ink that I can use with them. But regardless, trying to sort out a way to do some double star sketch type things, sketches, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Lots up there with, nice color contrast like that Winter Albireo. Almac is a great one in Andromeda.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Very
Yeah,
good.
so that was my night. It was a lot of fun. And I just, like I said, I have two more, I think, in Lepus that I need to observe in order to finish the winter section of Blake's list. And then a few more in throughout the year, and this one will be in my rearview mirror.
Cool. How many are in the, is it like 100 or 100? What do you settle on?
I
That
can't
was more.
remember. It's like 110 or 125 or
Yeah.
110.
Is it 100? I think he just settled on that whole Messier type number thing, which I'm never as much a fan on, but it's a little bit idiosyncratic to my mind, but it's all good.
Yeah, and I think there's like additional, like there's sort of 110 primary or target pairs. And
Yeah.
then with some of them, there's like a third or fourth member that if you have the right aperture and the right conditions, you might be able to see it, sort
Yeah.
of like a challenge aspect to it.
Okay.
And I don't know how many that would take it up to.
Oh, I see. I see. Yeah, I remember there was something funny with it, but yeah, it's cool. That's cool. Last night I saw Mercury. I know it to see it. Saw it between the houses just above streetlight, a few streets down. But yeah, just standing on my top floor, just chatting with Mike at the time, and yeah, saw that. But had a few neat things come in. Had these, but this was recommended by Royce. Not sure how I'm going to use it though. It wasn't exactly what I thought it was going to be. It's cool though. It's a pencil holder, and when you're sketching, of course, you get a variety of, for us anyway, we've got pens and pencils and that sort of thing. And I bought these. I had seen somebody use these. I think Jeremy Perez had a video on using. They're like individual pen clips. And I thought, oh, that'll be good. I'll get these individual pen clips and then I can clip them to my clipboard. But I've gravitated away from using a clipboard and I'm using just hardcover notebooks, really solid hardcover notebooks, which I quite like. But I've dispensed with the clipboard just simply for size and awkwardness reasons. So I couldn't really use those pen clips. I'm sure I can use them one way or another. But Royce had recommended getting this LightfootLTD.com. And this is a fairly inexpensive thing. It was $10. And what it looks like a slinky and it's attached to this little plastic contraption thing. And you can imagine it sort of spread out a little bit and you can drop your pens and pencils into this thing. And I thought it was going to be like a little bit bigger and wooden, but this is pretty small, which is nice. The back is smooth, but it comes with a little bit of Velcro. And so what you can do is you can Velcro it to a variety of different things depending on whatever you're attaching it to. So what I think I might try to do, what I might try to do is make like maybe just attach it to my light because I clamp my light on. My light has a fairly sizable clamp. I think that's what I'm going to do is put the Velcro on the light, and then when the light clamps on, I'll just attach this to the light, and then the whole thing is kind of together. I think it just makes sense. I think I kind of got it a little bit sorted out here just in the past few days how I'm going to do this. But yeah, I thought it was going to be this big wooden thing that you would like stick on a desk, and I was like, oh, that'll be cool because I can stick it on my desk in my observatory or up here when I'm sketching in the office. But I was like, ooh, this is a little bit more small and portable. It might work a little bit better just to even at the eyepiece. So I'm kind of excited to give this a try out. And then I bought it's just because Royce had sent me this to this supplier of cartoon illustration tools and such. I bought the bought some thumbnail storyboards for sketching because one of the things I was doing in the fall was sketching all the messies with my binoculars, but I was just using like a small sketch pad. It was fine, but it was like having to flip pages because I was just doing binocular sketching. So it was pretty just sort of quick and dirty sketches. And I was like, this is a very expensive way because the books cost like 25 or $30. I'm like, this is a very expensive way to sketch the messies like this just to kind of make use of marginal or whatever night. So I bought all this storyboard paper. It wasn't very expensive. And so it has like a spot to do your sketch or whatever you're illustrating. And in this case, it's not cartoons, but that's what it's designed for. And then below it, there's like a space for notes. And I was like, this is really cool. So I might take some of that and cut it up and then put that stuff on my clipboard and then use that as sort of my paper for the rest of that project, or just when nights aren't amazing, or as well, just when I'm trying to kind of get an object down. Sometimes you don't necessarily want to do like a whole focused kind of quote unquote proper sketch, but you just want to do something in like 2 or 3 minutes. So I'm kind of looking forward to using some of that paper. I'd looked at it before, but couldn't find the stuff that I wanted. And this, I think, is the stuff that I want. So yeah, it should be kind of neat stuff to play around with. So that's kind of what I've been up to. I got to go check on my observatory today or one of these days. Probably maybe I'll take Monday afternoon off since it's going to be 14 degrees for the first time in 6 months. Yeah, maybe I'll go out there and check on things. Don't know. We'll find out.
Yeah, I purchased a used sky quality meter
Oh.
just a week or two ago. It was a decent price on Astro Bicel, the used site here up in Canada. And I'm always a fan of data. And I know you and I have talked about these things as do you really need it? And probably the answer is no, but sort of a fun little accessory that I'll play with in the backyard and pretty much anywhere I go.
Nice. Pretty
Yeah.
cool. Not sure if you saw Adam's email. He was emailing us to let us know that some of these Explore Scientific eyepieces are on sale. They make Explore Scientific makes a variety of different sizes and types of eyepieces from, planetary eyepieces like Plossels and some wide fields to like 82 degree type ones to their own custom 92 degree type ones and 100 and 120 degree, all these different ones. But I guess over in the UK, I think First Light Optics or one of those places has them on sale. And he was saying that the 17 was more on sale than the 12, which is a switch because it was years before the 17 went on sale. I bought mine last year. And I think the moral of the story is maybe people can keep an eye open for upcoming sale, because often I notice that the Explorer eyepieces go on sale around the NEAF, the Northeast Astronomy Forum, which is like an astronomy expo or trade show or whatever you want to call it. And that happens, I think, towards the middle of April, something like that.
Okay.
So people can keep an eye open for that. Perhaps there's a sale going on, but yep.
There you go. Are you in the market for the 12?
Who, me?
Yeah.
No. I'm in the market for finishing my observatory. So yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah, I got a few things and then some that need to be finished out there. But I don't know. Like, I really like the 17. I already have the 12.5 doctor.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, and I really wish they would put out like an 8. That would be my dream, would be to have the 8. But I could see getting the 12. And the reason is, although it seems a bit excessive, is that for the observing, I do really like the doctor, but for the sketching, nothing beats the 17 millimeter 92 degree for sketching at the eyepiece. That is it. It's really hard to go sketching through other eyepieces after you use that one, just because it's so easy to get your eye into the light path of that eyepiece. It just seems like everywhere is the image, and there's almost no critical spot to hang your eye over the eye rim. It's just so easy to kind of look back and forth from your sketchbook or pad or whatever it is to the view in that eyepiece. It is so, so nice. So yeah, I could definitely see getting the 12. That is going to be very far down the road, because I am definitely triplicating wide fields. I have an old 12 millimeter 80 degree, the doctor 12.5 85 or whatever it is, and then this would be a 12 millimeter 80 92 or whatever it is. So, you know, sort of excessively triplicating eyepieces in the case. But yeah, if I could get a really good deal on one somewhere once, or I mean, hey, if Explore Science wants to send me a 12 millimeter, I'd be very happy to use it. I'm sure it would get an extremely positive review simply because the 12 or the 17 millimeter is just what my favorite eyepiece for sketching. So yeah, that would be my main reason for buying it. Yeah, but for like sticking in the eyepiece case though and cruising around because it's pretty big, it's sort of an in the observatory type eyepiece. But nice. Those are nice eyepieces for sure. So yeah, people are on the lookout for any of the Explore Science ones. Probably they'll have a sale soon. Usually they do around NEAF anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else, Shane, before we conclude?
That is all, sir.
Well, listeners, please share the show with other stargazers you know. Send us your show ideas, observations, and show notes to actualastronomy@gmail.com.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and we hope you enjoyed the show. If you are interested in more information, would like to contact us, or if you would like to support the podcast, check out our website, actualastronomy.com.